I'm Frank Vaughn. It is March 3rd, 2025, and I'm coming at you with some advice. Never let a man who has a purse lead you anywhere in life. Men with purses don't lead, including this one. That's a purse. I don't care what anybody says. That's a purse. And this man has decided that everything is on the table. Boots on the ground in Ukraine. Warplanes, as if Canada has any that function. Can we even field a battalion? We cannot police our own borders. We cannot deal with the rampant cartel and triad crime networks that run this country. Run your politics. Run your ports. Have a free flow of manufactured drugs, manufactured right here in Canada, exporting to the world, not just the United States, to the entire world. But this guy wants you to believe that we can afford troops on the ground in Ukraine to die for who? Zelensky. And a corrupt regime in Ukraine that is nothing but a money laundering racket. A man who has killed hundreds of thousands of his own people rather than affixing his signature to documents that have been presented to him at multiple times. Peace on the table. But he, along with the leaders in NATO, have chosen war every time. Let's listen to what he has to say after billions of dollars, after your future and the future in Canada of our military has been sent overseas uselessly to fight in a war on the other side of the planet, after all of this money and resource. Let's listen to what he has to say.
The U.S. will have to send their sons and daughters exactly the same way as we are sending their sons and daughters to war. And they will have to fight because it's NATO that we're talking about, and they will be dying.
So, it's not enough money. It's not enough manpower of his own. He wants to send your sons and daughters to die too in a useless war that cannot be won in Ukraine. Nothing is enough for this welfare case. The more we give him, the more he wants. He's talking about what happens if NATO gets directly involved in Ukraine. That if Russians start killing members of NATO, even though they've deployed on foreign soil yet again, NATO's supposed to be a defensive alliance, but we seem to do an awful lot of offensive operations outside of NATO's jurisdiction. If we deploy troops and they get killed by Russians, that triggers Article 5 of NATO, which requires all NATO signatories to get involved in kinetic warfare with the Russians. That's why it's time to leave NATO. Because if we're letting this psychopath, this dictator, this man who has overstayed his welcome in Ukraine, couldn't win an election to save his life, that's why he has no election. This man who's repressed his media, who's banned all political opposition, this man who has fed the flower of Ukrainian youth to a war that didn't need to be fought, this man under whose government, before the war began, spent 10 years trying to ethnic cleanse the Russian-speaking people, the Russian cultural people, out of the east of Ukraine, the majority of the people, whose government was installed by a coup. This guy is going to dictate the future of NATO policy? This welfare case? This junkie? It's time to leave NATO behind. And unfortunately, here in Canada, we don't have any politicians within reach of power who have any real vision. Do you understand that Fortress North America is a wonderful idea? The idea of bringing American troops home from Europe and overseas and drawing down the empire and focusing on the prosperity and greatness of North America, our continent, which has every single thing we need. The world needs North America. The world needs our food production. The world needs our product. That will not change. But what could change is a peaceful and lasting settlement between the civilizations, between the various nations. In 2016, if Donald Trump had been allowed to have his way, he was looking for detente then. If he had have been able to talk and engage with the Russians and come up with a deal. Now, at that point, guys, you got to remember, the Russians were selling the natural gas into Europe. They were selling their energy into Europe. They were enabling European prosperity. Part of Europe's problem is over Ukraine, over NATO expansion, over EU expansion, they have committed economic suicide by cutting off the life's blood of their economy, which was coming from Russia. So they have huge problems. They've got mass immigration. They've got inflation. They've got governments that have grown too big. and they have a populist wave, they want to try and label the AfD as being extremist. Well, those extremists just captured a huge chunk of the German vote, and they are the government in waiting. You just wait for it. The next German election, it's going to be AfD if the conservatives and the socialists don't figure it out. And they're not going to figure it out. They got big problems in Europe. We don't need to drag North America down for the sake of Europe's plan to trigger World War III. Now, they were able to mire Donald Trump in 2016 in constant accusations of Russiagate and golden showers and all this nonsense and impeachment. And we got a war out of it. We got a big war, a big mess, which now he's going full steam ahead because he doesn't care this time. First time around, he cared what the media said. He cared what his opponent said. That's why he never charged Hillary Clinton. That's why he never prosecuted, because the man didn't want to hurt the country, because the entire reason he ran to become president was for the country. He could have led a selfish life. I may not be Donald Trump, but I understand that. I like my introspection. I like my space. I don't necessarily want to get in front of a camera every day and talk about these things. My dreams are plagued with the stresses of the world. The reason that in my intro, I show Atlas carrying the world. That's who that Greek god is. That's Atlas, because that's how it feels. And that feeling is what drove Trump into politics. But this time around, he doesn't care. He wants to pursue peace unequivocally. We should all be celebrating that, but instead we're clamoring for war. Now, Pierre Poilievre, he used to know better. Someone had a talk with this guy. I don't know who it was. I don't know what happened. But all of a sudden, Pierre Poilievre has come right in line with the United Nations and World Economic Forum agenda. There he is with Zelensky in parliament. This is when we brought, I believe this is the same moment we brought a Nazi into parliament and celebrated them in our own house. Because people don't like history. They don't want to understand that the Western Ukrainians have always been allied and leaning towards Nazism. And Germans, their pogrom against the East is to stamp out Russian culture. It dates back to the Second World War and even before. People don't want to talk about what the Western Ukrainians did to the Poles, let alone the Jews, and what they were doing in the East post-coup. The whole truth, there was a point at which Pierre Poilievre at least visibly understood this. He might not have been saying things out loud, and there was an argument to be made that Poilievre was minding his P's and Q's until he got in office. But something's changed. It's not just that he is trying to be strategic to win an election, because this strategy is alienating his base. It's almost like he's trying to lose, the same as O'Toole did and the same as Scheer did. With his advocacy for reciprocal tariffs against the United States, instead of de-escalating, the United States rightly called this out as a global clearinghouse for drug trafficking. They rightly call this out as a global clearinghouse for terrorist money laundering. We do those things. I've proven it in my videos. Many other people have proven it. If you don't want to believe it, that's your problem. Trump called us out. He told the truth. And we could be responsive to that truth. We could be doing something about it. We could be deploying some of these military resources to look after our border or bust up the cartels. We could be putting personnel in our ports to bust up the supply chain of raw materials coming from China into this country, getting manufactured into drugs which are polluting your streets everywhere, and then we export to the world. This is what we're doing. This is what we could be doing. Instead, Trudeau is talking about troops on the ground to Ukraine, and Poilievre doesn't want to take a position. Now, how much do you want to bet Poilievre does take a position, and he will support the government, because that's what he's been doing lately. When it comes to Ukraine, all options are on the table. When it comes to the trade war, he is happy, along with the rest of Team Canada, to sacrifice your livelihood. You need to understand, the tariffs that Trump is applying are not as painful to you and your pocketbook and your purchasing power as the tariffs that Canada has prepared in response. They're going to drive up the price of your groceries, drive up the price of your basics. They're going to inflate your dollar. It's already happening. The dollar is once again losing value. And we haven't even gotten started. That chapter in our story starts tomorrow, and there isn't a single politician in the House who wants to do anything productive about it. What happened to Pierre? I don't have the answer to that question. I can't explain why politics has shifted so much in Canada to a path of desolation and destruction. That's the path we're on, and all parties seem to agree to it. I want you to understand that America has shifted, and we would be smart to shift with her. We should be talking more about what is happening within the U.S. government, how it's changing, how the deep state's being purged, how the perverts are being kicked out, how they're trying to actually clean up the United States and set everybody up, set their citizens up for a future, a century of prosperity. Have a listen to this.
This is a war that should have never happened. It's a war the Russians tried repeatedly to settle on terms that were very, very beneficial to Ukraine and us. The major thing they wanted was for us to keep NATO out of the Ukraine. The big military contractors want to add new countries to NATO all the time. Why? Because then that country has to conform its military purchases to NATO weapon specifications, which means certain companies, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Boeing, and Lockheed, get a trapped market. In March of 2022, we committed $113 billion. Just to give you an example, we could have built a home for almost every homeless person in this country. We then committed another $24 billion since then, 2 months ago, and now President Biden's asking for another $60 billion. But the big, big expenses are going to come after the war, when we have to rebuild all the things that we destroyed. Mitch McConnell was asked, can we really afford to spend $113 billion to Ukraine? He said, don't worry. It's not really going to Ukraine.
It's going to American defense manufacturers.
So he just admitted it's a money laundering scheme. And who do you think owns every one of those companies? BlackRock. So Tim Scott, during the Republican debate, said, don't worry. It's not a gift to Ukraine. It's a loan. So raise your hand if you think that that loan's ever getting paid back. Yeah, of course it's not. So why do they call it a loan? Because if they call it a loan, they can impose loan conditions. And what are the loan conditions that we impose on? Number one, an extreme austerity program, so that if you're poor in Ukraine, you're going to be poor forever. Number two, most important, Ukraine has to put all of its government-owned assets up for sale to multinational corporations, including all of its agricultural land, the biggest single asset in Europe, in Ukraine. There's been 1,000 years of war fought over that land. It's the richest farmland in the world. It's the breadbasket of Europe. 500,000 kids, almost, Ukrainian kids, have died to keep that land as part of Ukraine. They almost certainly didn't know about this loan condition. They've already sold 30% of it. The buyers were DuPont, Cargill, and Monsanto. Who do you think owns all of those companies? Yeah, BlackRock. And then in December, President Biden gave out the contract to rebuild Ukraine. And who do you think got that contract? BlackRock.
You have to understand how powerful these words are. You need to understand that when it comes to the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, these multinational corporations, there's this idea on the left that corporations form the basis of corporatism, that they're actually an element of capitalism. When you have monopoly capitalism, you don't actually have free enterprise. You have capture. These people are socialists. At the end of the day, if you look at the Soviet Union, who controlled manufacturing? Big oligarchs. It's the same people. It's the same idea. You can label it however you want. But the BlackRock of the world and the companies that are under its umbrella, they form the backbone of a global socialist government. Kennedy's words were spoken during his presidential campaign while he was running against Trump and Biden. But what has happened since? Kennedy's now in government, and you can see the Americans desperately trying to change the tune. They're trying to save the world. And I couldn't give two good damns if every Canadian politician is dead set against it. I couldn't care if the majority of citizens don't understand this, because this is where the truth is. You have to understand history. You have to understand who's involved in Ukraine. You have to understand why. You have to understand how dirty Zelensky is. You have to understand that he's willing to kill his people and your sons and daughters so that he can keep the faucets open until, I guess, the nukes start falling, extracting every bit of monetary and material value that he can for his own personal habits and wants and those of his friends, if he even has friends. I think these people, you can't really describe them as friends. They're sociopaths. They're narcissists. They're psychopaths. They get as much material enjoyment out of life as they can at the expense of any semblance of morality and soul, and they will do it until they're back in the ground, because I don't think they believe very strongly that there's any accountability waiting for them in the afterlife, or that there's anything beyond life, or that there's anything greater than their material comfort to live for. They don't live for righteous virtue. They don't live for anything but their own personal satisfaction. And they're in the highest levels of power, and they want desperately to keep this war going. And the Americans are the only ones trying to walk it back. And we should be joining with them. Our political leaders should be joining with them. We should be seriously considering everything they're proposing, because it sets us up for a century of peace and prosperity. We could actually see that. But you're being convinced to actively oppose your own well-being. Team Canada, convincing you that, and it's not just, it's your influencers too, convincing you that America's not a reliable strategic partner, that they're not a reliable trading partner. They've always been there for us with money and with a guarantee of our defense, which is why we've denuded our military. We just count on the Americans for everything. And now all of a sudden you're supposed to believe they're not reliable? There are no friends between nations, but you can't get a better strategic partner than the United States. They are right there, and they've been working with us this entire time. And because of politics, because of this war, because we don't want to crack down on drugs and crime and cartelism, there are a lot of people who lie to you. They tell you that Canada is this nice, safe space, and we top the list of freedom, but they can't seem to read the Charter of Rights and understand that freedom, that our rights are not actually God-given rights above government, but they're bestowed by the state since Papa Trudeau made it that way. Your rights are subject to state approval. Your rights are subject to people who are willing to send your money and your materiel to a useless war in Ukraine. People who are willing to sell your businesses and your resource sector out to foreign buyers. People who allow money laundering in this country that, along with mass immigration, which is a whole other problem, drives the price of real estate out of existence for most people. So people are living 5-10 to a small home just to make ends meet. The people who have turned Toronto into a foreign city, who have turned Canada into a resource colony, you follow them into perdition. Every day in the comment section, I get people saying, what about the PPC, Frank? What about the PPC? They have something different. Bernier says all the right things. They've got the policy. They've got the platform. They've got this. They've got that. But they don't understand. Right out the gate on this YouTube channel, there's this falsehood. The People's Party of Canada was launched by Max on September 14th, 2018. Max didn't launch the People's Party. There was a lot of us who launched the People's Party. Everyone that was there at the beginning is gone. We've all left. And the reason we left is because Max is not interested in the people in the party. He fears them. He doesn't give them a constitution. He doesn't give them bylaws. He doesn't give them member rights. He doesn't give them anything. There's never been a founding convention. There's only been these conferences, which are not conventions. They're a mechanistic aspect of the corporate design of the People's Party. The People's Party is four guys, last time I checked, four corporate board members. They have raised millions of dollars, successfully monetizing the justified anger of a lot of people. They allow in their ranks the most rancorous conduct. People cursing and swearing and calling names in the name of the PPC, their candidates insulting and throwing invective all over people. Maxime Bernier's Twitter account calling people retards. Every attempt has been made by the People's Party to lose every single opportunity electorally. Max can't win back his own seat. This is a man who used to enjoy 62% support in the place where he was born, in the Bows. He can't get elected dog catcher anymore because they know he's a joke. They know he's not serious. He doesn't even write his own tweets, folks. He's got staff that does that for him. He sits down in Florida and he wants you to believe that he is leading a revolution in Canada. He's fearful. How many millions of dollars have they raised? Look at this channel. It's pathetic. The last video was 4 months ago. It is Nerf ball interviews. He's got three interviews still up here with Daniel Tyrie, the former executive director. Last I heard, he was suing him. Don't quote me. Last I heard, Daniel was suing the PPC. I don't know what's happening with that. I don't know if it ever actually happened. Maxime uses people. And when he's done using them, he throws them away. I got an email yesterday from a concerned viewer and said, "We need you back, Frank. We need you and Kelly Lawrence to come back." It's the wrong question. Why aren't you asking why we left? Kelly's an amazing guy. He's a talented guy. He's a good man. And he finally had enough. I made a bunch of predictions in 2020. All of them have come to pass. Bernier's not serious. He occupies the space where something else could be. Real leadership. Compare and contrast Bernier's channel to mine. I'm not making a case for leadership of the PPC. I never have. There's this idea out there that I wanted the leadership and that I was jealous, or that I was jealous of the fact that Bernier pays himself, or all these other vain rumors that just aren't true. First off, there's no mechanism for anybody else to run for leadership. The whole thing's a farce. When they did their leadership vote, it was a single candidate leadership vote on a postcard that wasn't legally binding in any way. It was a farce. When we made a lot of noise in 2020 about the fact that there was no party constitution, about the fact that the members have no rights, that there's no people in the People's Party, headquarters did this thing. They reached out to what was left of the EDAs, because eventually they just merged all the EDAs into another hyper-corporate structure that they could more centralize and control. And this was all before the by-election in which Bernier decided to parachute himself into Manitoba. Before that, when he decided to run in Toronto and just completely killed any chances he was ever going to win. When we made noise about the lack of a constitution, headquarters decided to reach out to people and said, "Make your submissions. Make your recommendations. We're going to do a consulting process, and this September we're going to announce the Constitution." And when September rolled around, they shelved the whole idea because it was all PR. He's not trying to win elections. He's not trying to change the conversation. I have no budget. He has millions of dollars. Why am I making harder-hitting content than he is? Why is he leaning on everybody else to do all the heavy lifting? Everybody works for free. You have no rights. You have no say. You have no help from HQ. When you run your election campaigns, if you don't get donations directly to your EDA, the People's Party just keeps them all. And none of the candidates get any help. There's only one reason. It's not stupidity. It's not incompetence. Max is lazy. He's hard to get out of his hotel room. Again, ask anybody that's ever actually had to work with him at a higher level. I ate dinner with this guy. I used to talk to him on the phone. We did a lot of things together. I gave the first speech at the opening conference. I emceed the biggest event in 2019 because I believed in the People's Party. I believed in the people. I believed we needed better representation in a party structure. And I used to say, when I ran in 2019, I said very clearly and unequivocally, this isn't a one-man show. This is a party of the people. And you can see it. Well, you can't because I don't have it online, but you can see it in all my work leading up to that election. I said it, and all of our candidates said it. All of our people said it. But this was the first moment of truth. After the election was done, and we all went home, in the aftermath, all of a sudden, the people who said it was about the people, many of them started talking about how it's Max's party, how it's Max and Bernier's. Bernier himself refers to himself as the dictator. He says there will be no constitution, there will be no bylaws, there will be nothing until he decides to retire with his gold-plated pension. Which is why I think in the next election, if we get one, and it's an if we get an election, he's going to spend all the money, and then he's going to retire, and he's going to leave you high and dry. And you'll still have a PPC. And then the political party can actually be made, but you'll be broke, and you'll have no leadership. He's going to abandon you, and he always was, because this is not about building an actual political movement in Canada. If you read the corporate documents, one time I showed them on screen, I showed you. It talks about advocacy. There's nothing illegal being done here, but it is deceptive and it is dirty. And if you call him out on it, you'll be blocked and you'll be ghosted and you'll be ignored, just like me and thousands of others who tried. That's the PPC. It's not an alternative. It is a private piggy bank for him and his friends, and that's all it will ever be until he leaves. And a lot of the PPC shills who, admittedly, they came in after me, they don't understand the history. They don't understand how the thing was formed and how it became obvious that the concept of it winning elections was fraudulent. They say, but they have the right ideas. They have the platform. They have the policy, Frank. When did Maxim Bernier or the PPC gain a monopoly on good ideas? It's not a monopoly. They didn't create anything new and novel. They plagiarized ideas that were already there. And they did it with the false identification that they were a political movement. They're not. They occupy the space where something real could be. And until we get rid of them, we cannot create a federal alternative. Which is why, at this point, I don't have hope for federal politics. Because they're all the same up there. I used to say that I was going to vote Poilievre, because my life would improve in certain ways. But I don't even know if I've got that motivation anymore. He's really lost me in the last few weeks. He's lost the script. Like, I'd almost rather the Liberals stay in office. Oh, it's treachery to say that. With 51st state on the table, that's a better option. Right out the gate. People don't understand how good statehood would be compared to this federation. I've proven it in my videos. I've showed you how much more empowered you would be, how much more secure Canada would be, how your heritage would be intact, how your land would be better represented. I show in every way that it is objectively better as an option. But take that off the table. Let's pretend for a minute that Mark Carney wouldn't accelerate the move towards the 51st state. My concern, my biggest concern, is the status quo. The Federation keeps ticking on exactly the way it is, and nothing changes. Nobody wants to open up the Constitution, not even Bernier. He just came up with the idea recently of actually opening up the Constitution. I would say because the person who writes his tweets, has always watched my channel and my content. They have a number of shell accounts which they interact with me with, and I know who it is. And they've been plagiarizing me since the day we founded the party. Because like I said, good ideas don't possess a monopoly. Many people can share them. But when I express the ideas, when I put together hard-hitting content, why aren't you asking why isn't Bernier producing hard-hitting content? He's got a multi-million dollar budget. His audio still sucks. I do a better job and I don't have a budget. Anyway, back to the point. If we don't do 51st state, if we don't rip up the Federation, the provinces, particularly the Western province, but every province, including Quebec, should have an interest in breaking this country up and going our own way. It's an unfair country. It's unfair by design. You don't have say. You don't have personal power. You don't have citizen sovereignty. Your rights are privileges. We have this equalization formula, which robs one part of the country to the benefit of another. We have a non-participant volunteer province. Quebec didn't even bother to sign Confederation. They're just here voluntarily. They can leave anytime they want, and they hold the rest of us over a barrel. Why? What are we holding on to? Whether it's 51st state or independence, we got to do something different. Or if we want to keep Canada together for whatever reason, I don't even understand it at this point. I've researched it so much. It's like, what exactly, What exactly do we lose when we flush the system, when we create a new system, when we renegotiate the Federation, when we actually listen to the criticisms and we're honest about what this country has become? What do we lose? We can keep the people. We can keep what's left of the culture. These people, this Team Canada, they have destroyed your culture. They have assaulted your flag. They have erased you. And now all of a sudden they want to bring it back in this fight with the Americans, which in which you will suffer and they will never miss a meal. I can't emphasize that point enough. They're the ones that have destroyed Canada. They're the ones that have undermined our fabric. But when I say that you can retain, that you can bring back that fabric, that you can retain that culture, that you can bring it back, that you can restore Canada, that you can get rid of 4 million people and send them back just by letting their visas expire and get them out. We can start cleaning this country up. We can get rid of the crime. We can get rid of the drugs. We can get rid of the cartels and the triads. Reach across the border to our natural strategic partner and ask for help. Somehow I'm the bad guy. Somehow I'm disloyal. I tell you the truth. And I do it with passion. I do it because I care. I do it because I'm called to do it. Bernier's not called to do it. Polyev's not called to do it. Trudeau's not there with any passion. I am. And I do it on a shoestring. And I don't say that to guilt anybody. I'm just telling you how it is. And there's a lot of people out there like me. I'm not alone. We're in a minority. The people who are actually driving at the reality of the story, we're in a minority. Most influencers just want to tell you what you want to hear. But guys like me, even though we're rare, I just want to tell you the truth, whether you like it or not. And we need more leadership like that. Not telling people what they want to hear, but telling people what they need to hear and then convincing them of why they need to hear it by showing them the facts and showing them reality. And small parties or big parties, we don't have that on offer here in the country. But we might be able to do something provincially, or we might be able to do something with the Americans once Team Canada's made you suffer enough to wake up. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like the work, please consider supporting it via the website. But as always, I offer it freely. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.